Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Today, we're with Professor Richard Green, who is Professor of Energy Economics and Director of the Institute for Energy Research and Policy. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
So tell us exactly what that means.
My role in the university is to coordinate the research we do in energy, which involves around 80 academics and a large number of postdoctoral researchers and PhD students, and to help bring the implications of the technical work we do to policymakers.
Now, it's my understanding that there's going to be big changes afoot in energy over the next decade.
Yes, the European Union has agreed a target to get 20% of its energy from renewable sources by 2020, and the UK's share of that is going to be 15% of all our energy. And we use about a fifth of our energy as electricity, two-fifths as heat, and two-fifths as transport. But because it's relatively harder to use renewable energy for heat, and particularly for transport, there are issues about how sustainable biofuels are. That means that the biggest share of the work is going to be done in electricity, and we will probably need to get about a third of our electricity from renewable sources by 2020 to meet the EU target.
So in a very practical way, what does that mean is going to happen?
It means there's going to be an awful lot of offshore wind power and some more onshore wind power, probably about equal to a third of the capacity we already have of all types of plant will need to be built in wind power.
But at the same time, a lot of other stations are going to have to shut.
Yes, we have got nuclear power stations which are reaching the end of their natural lives over the next few years, and most of them by 2020 or just afterwards. And that is something like a seventh of our capacity that we would lose. And a lot of coal-fired and oil-fired stations, something like a quarter of the ones we have at the moment, are going to have to shut by 2016 because of anti-pollution rules. They emit too much sulfur dioxide at present, which causes acid rain. And because these are stations that are not used very much and are getting quite old anyway, it doesn't make sense for the companies to keep them open and fit expensive new pollution control equipment. Instead, it's more sensible to shut the old stations and build something new to higher pollution standards that you can then run for many years.
So it sounds like a huge amount of investment coming up. Do we know just how much it's going to cost, and where is that money going to come from?
People have talked about up to £100 billion of investment over the next decade in the renewable stations, in the conventional stations that we need, partly to replace the ones that are going to shut and partly to back up the wind stations for times when it's not windy enough to get much power, and also to build the transmission lines to help bring power south from the renewable stations, most of which are going to be in the North Sea or in the north of the UK, and therefore quite a long way from many of the customers who live further south. The hope is that the private sector will be willing to pay for this, and provided they can find somebody to lend them the money, they would be willing to do so if they think they can get customers to pay higher bills in future to pay the costs back.
So it's higher bills that we're facing, but also probably higher demand. So demand is increasing, particularly during the really cold winters that we seem to be having.
The latest predictions from the National Grid actually imply that the peak demand for energy may not rise very much from year to year, because even though people want more energy services, a higher standard of comfort, if we can become more energy efficient and if we can become smarter in how we use that energy, you can do so without having a big increase in the peak demand.
So are there some new ways in the future that we'll be able to be even more energy efficient?
There's quite a lot that could be done with existing technology, and we need to break down the barriers that mean we haven't always done that in the past. For example, a landlord doesn't necessarily have much of an incentive to make a house more efficient if it's the tenant who gets the lower electricity bill afterwards. But there are also some developments coming up where technology should help us. So if we have a more intelligent meter, that can send information to some of the appliances in your house, telling you when it would be particularly helpful if you didn't run your water heater for a short period. And that could then reduce the demand for electricity at a critical time, perhaps when it wasn't very windy, but everybody had just come home, switched the lights on and was wanting to cook. You wouldn't notice that your water heater hadn't been on for a few minutes, but it would mean that we didn't need quite as much standby capacity to cope with that sudden peak in demand.
So does that mean that in the future, my freezer at home might be turning itself on and off because it knows how much capacity and demand there is in the system?
Yes, and people are already producing devices to do this. If there is rather more demand than capacity available, then the frequency of the system, the speed with which the power stations are turning over their generators, will drop, and fridges and freezers can be built that can sense that. Then, instead of turning on the motor, which normally only runs for a few minutes in every hour anyway, instead of turning it on when the temperature reaches, say, 5 degrees for a fridge, you wait until 5.5 degrees. Your food is still just as safe, but those extra few minutes of delay mean that you're taking less power from the system at a time when it's rather short of power. And again, it means that the industry needs less capacity on standby because your fridge is doing the job for it. And there's the possibility that the industry will be willing to pay people who have the fridges of that kind for the benefit they give.
I have to say, as a consumer, all of this, Richard, sounds quite scary to me. It sounds like prices are going up, we're losing power stations, we've got to build ones that we haven't started building yet, the time is ticking on the EU clock, and new appliances sound great, but it also sounds like we might have a concern that one day I get home, it's the middle of winter, turn on my kettle, turn on my telly, and it all goes black. Can you reassure me that the future is not quite as scary as it sounds?
I think over the next few years, the industry is planning to build a lot of gas-fired stations, which will be able to replace the coal-fired stations that have to be retired by 2016. It does mean that we will need to import a lot more gas, so we need to spend a lot of money making sure that infrastructure is there and that we have enough storage to be able to take out lots of gas in a short period if it's ever exceptionally cold. Over the years to 2020, they are also planning to build quite a lot of nuclear stations. More than enough have been announced at a very early stage to replace the ones that are due to close by around 2020. The problem is they haven't yet made any final decisions on building those stations. They will be very expensive. And if the companies are not sure that the cost of carbon is going to stay high enough to make it worthwhile, they may be reluctant to put in the large amounts of money needed. So it's not a crisis, but it is certainly a very big challenge.
Professor Richard Green, thank you very much.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists. The interviewer for the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast was Lucy Vernal, and the producer was Andy Tootell.